ash hinders relief efforts in Tonga following a massive volcanic eruption, with aid possibly still days away. Plus, investors are punishing unprofitable firms as rate hikes loom, and lobbyists face headwinds on Capitol Hill as businesses push for new pandemic stimulus.
So everyone's sort of deserving. The question is it the government's job to keep giving out money?
It's Tuesday, January 18th. I'm Luke Vargas with The Wall Street Journal. Here's the AM edition of What's News, the top headlines and business stories moving your world today. The Pacific island nation of Tonga remains largely cut off from the world, days after a massive volcanic eruption knocked out internet connectivity and blanketed the islands in ash. Two people were killed by a tsunami that followed Saturday's eruption, and military surveillance flights indicate widespread damage across Tonga. Lord Fatafehi Fafanua is Tonga's Speaker of Parliament.
The ash is proving quite problematic, not just for water and sanitation, because Tonga collects its water from the roofs of households, but in terms of access for the aid from Australia and New Zealand. Latest information I have is that 60% of the runway has been cleared. I hear up to 200 volunteers are sweeping the runway in preparation for the supplies to land on Thursday or Friday.
The tsunami severed the lone underwater fiber optic cable connecting Tonga to the world. Officials say it could take weeks to repair. It's shaping up to be a tough week for Senate Democrats and Majority Leader Chuck Schumer. Schumer plans to bring up two signature pieces of legislation for debate and possible votes as early as today. Both face defeat. 50 Democrats support elections legislation that would expand mail-in voting and make Election Day a national holiday, but that's short of the 60 votes needed to pass. Schumer then plans to propose changing Senate rules to eliminate the filibuster and that 60-vote threshold, though two Democrats, West Virginia's Joe Manchin and Arizona's Kyrsten Sinema, oppose that move. Texas and Arizona have joined two other states in recovering all the jobs they lost at the start of the COVID-19 pandemic. Another dozen states are expected to follow suit by the middle of this year. Companies moving to those states have led to outsized payrolls growth in the retail, warehousing, technology, and transportation industries. That said, the U.S. as a whole still had 3.6 million fewer positions at the end of 2021 than before the pandemic began. According to the UN, it will take at least 2 years before global unemployment falls back to pre-COVID levels. And major U.S. airlines are warning of severe flight disruptions unless regulators delay this week's planned rollout of new 5G service near airports. The Federal Aviation Administration says certain 5G frequencies could interfere with flight safety systems, including altitude sensors. Those systems are especially critical during poor weather conditions. United Airlines warns that 5G-related disruptions could cause 15,000 flight cancellations, delays, or diversions. Investors are losing patience with shares in unprofitable companies. New analysis by the Journal has found that loss-making firms have tumbled since the end of September compared to profitable peers. It's a sobering reversal for companies with sky-high valuations, including many that IPO'd since the start of the pandemic. Here with a look at what's driving this trend is markets reporter Anna Hertenstein. Hi, Anna.
Hey.
Anna, first off, what surprised you most about this analysis?
So this analysis looks at what happened to companies in the Nasdaq, and they're split into two groups, profitable and unprofitable. And the difference has been pretty staggering. On average, the unprofitable companies lost about a quarter of their value in the fourth quarter. And the profitable companies in the index rose about an average of 1.5% at the same time.
What kind of companies are we talking about in that unprofitable bucket?
So a few examples would be Rivian Automotive. They're the electric vehicle startup. They had a loss of over $1 billion in the third quarter, and their shares have fallen 54% since their peak in mid-November. Another one would be Robinhood. After their IPO, their shares shot up the following month, but they're down over 70% since.
Okay, so what accounts for the cooling sentiment around these riskier growth stocks?
It's about the Fed. Fed policymakers have said they're raising interest rates. It's potentially as soon as March to try to bring down inflation. And this has to do with how you value companies. Typically, you find the present value of future cash flows and you use an interest rate in this calculation. And this interest rate will be based on the Fed's policy rate. There'll be other things baked in, but this will be the first building block. And the higher this interest rate is, the lower the present value of the company is. And this affects growth stocks more heavily because their value is often based on an assumption that they have a lot of growth in the future.
Got it. And this is all coming at a time when U.S. stocks have gotten off to a tricky start to the year. What does that tell us about the stock market right now?
So the American stock market is very tech heavy. Like, for example, the S&P 500's heaviest weighted sector by far is tech. And that, of course, doesn't necessarily mean that these companies are in the same camp as these really young, unprofitable companies we were just talking about. But so far this year, tech more broadly is getting affected by these shifts in the market's expectations for Fed policy and interest rates. So it likely means some pretty choppy markets ahead, even for the broader market. Like, for example, the NASDAQ is down around 5% since the beginning of the year, and the S&P 500 is down over 2% so far. So you are seeing a broader effect as well.
That was markets reporter Anna Hertenstein. Anna, thank you.
Thanks so much.
Coming up, lobbyists representing an array of American businesses are making the case for more COVID-19 financial relief from Congress, but they're not getting the reception they received earlier in the pandemic. We've got more on that after the break.
This episode is brought to you by Vanta. Managing the requirements for modern security programs is increasingly challenging. Vanta's trust management platform helps you quickly assess risk, streamline security reviews, and automate compliance for SOC 2, ISO 27001, and more. Plus, save time by completing security questionnaires with Vanta AI. Learn how by watching Vanta's on-demand demo at vanta.com/WSJ. That's VANTA.com/WSJ.
Business groups from around the country are lobbying for another round of federal stimulus. After a second year of pandemic interruptions to business as usual, hotels, gyms, restaurants, even sports teams say they need more help to stay afloat. But the receptivity to those appeals in Washington isn't what it once was. Joining us with the story is Journal investigative reporter Brody Mullins. Hi, Brody.
Hey, thanks for having me.
Could you update us on the lobbying effort that you're seeing and hearing about in Washington? Who is it coming from, and what specifically are they asking for?
Well, what's going on now is that there are a ton of companies and businesses who feel like they did not get enough money or any money in Congress's prior stimulus bills for coronavirus and are now hiring lobbyists and coming to Washington saying, hey, we've really been hurt in the last 2 years and we need help, and now's the time to do it. We write about minor league baseball teams and other minor league sports that have received almost no money so far through the pandemic, even though minor league baseball, which is a business, was shut down entirely for the 2020 season. Hotels obviously have been hurt. Gyms say they were the first people to shut down and the last people to open up because of various mandates and shutdowns and business slowdowns. And bus companies have also been hurt. There's plenty of others. All these folks have lobbyists who are coming to Washington to try to get money to keep their lights on, to keep their doors open, and to stay in business.
Yeah, on that point, what has been the response to these requests from members of Congress?
Well, it's divided. So far, Democrats seem to be more inclined to help out these businesses. For the most part, these are smaller businesses, not huge corporations. But Republicans have said, hey, you know what? It's been 2 years. We've given out billions and billions and billions of dollars. I think that's enough. And we'll see. In the next few weeks, we'll see what's going to happen.
One sort of political narrative that's taken shape lately is that it's no longer the pandemic per se that's causing pain for businesses, but rather state or local restrictions, whether it's indoor dining limitations or specific testing rules that have exacerbated staffing shortages. Are you hearing from members of Congress this argument as they justify why a new round of nationwide relief isn't necessary?
I mean, that's really what gym owners are saying, that they were the first ones forced to shut down. They're the last ones allowed to open up. For by and large, they did not qualify for much money, for much relief in earlier bills. And they're saying that they would have stayed open. They don't have that many employees. There's not that many people in the building. Perhaps it's not a place where coronavirus would spread. But because of these mandates, they're forced to shut down. And therefore, you know, they deserve some help. I think it's a really interesting argument, and I'm not sure if it'll ever get settled. But Democrats and governments say that, well, if we can shut down things temporarily and slow the flow of business and make diners eat outdoors or in more limited capacity restaurants, that slows the spread and therefore helps the economy in the long run. Sort of a chicken or egg, and I think we're never going to know the right answer.
What are some possible ways forward in Congress for any new relief measures if a large omnibus relief package isn't possible, could narrower bills be focused on certain industries or maybe targeted to certain regions of the country?
The way things work in Congress, it's always easier to block something than to pass something. There are thousands and thousands of bills introduced every year, and only a few become law. One that will have to become law this year is a big spending bill to pay for almost all the government operations. Congress has to pass something in mid-February to fund the government. And therefore, that's sort of a train or a vehicle that's going to leave the station. And I think every lobbyist and every lawmaker knows if you can get your provision added to that bill, it will pass. So there'll be a scramble to try to add things to that. Opponents are going to try to keep things off. And whatever is not on that bill, and these stimulus funds for businesses certainly may not be on that bill, but whatever is not on that bill is going to have a real difficult time becoming law this year because it will have to pass on its own. And that requires a vote in the House and Senate. And in the Senate these days, you need 60 votes for everything. Democrats have 50 votes, so you need to get 10 Republicans. So things get very, very complicated if you can't get your relief on that spending bill.
Have you heard any lawmakers pushing back against further relief because original funding hadn't been spent in its entirety?
Yes, I actually spoke to a House Republican office who made that exact point, that there are still pockets of money around the government from past spending bills, stimulus bills that had not been spent, and therefore that money should be fully tapped out before we spend more money. Interestingly, the advocates of some of these stimulus funds that I'm writing about, in fact, it was Senator Susan Collins of Maine, one of the things that she's doing to try to help this small business stimulus bill is to go around federal agencies and ask them to find the pockets of money that were not spent before, money that was left on the table. She's trying to regroup that money and repurpose it for this bill. The idea would be to keep the actual price tag of this bill as low as possible. We'll see how that works, but it's a really good question because that is what some supporters are trying to do.
If Congress doesn't pass more COVID relief for businesses, are there any other options available here? Could the administration find other money somewhere to help out businesses? Could states take the lead?
States can certainly do whatever they want. I know states are already really cash strapped and must by law balance their budgets each year, so they don't have too much leeway. The administration could take the idea that you just mentioned, which is go back into the Small Business Administration or the Treasury, or there was that special airline fund and a special restaurant fund, and see if there's any money left around that can be repurposed. That's a possibility, but the administration can't spend money, new money, that has not been authorized by Congress. It's one of the Congress's most important responsibilities and rights. That's all to say that the answer is no, that it would be very difficult for the administration to do anything, or really states to do anything, to further help businesses hurt by the pandemic.
That was Journal investigative reporter Brody Mullins. Brody, thanks so much.
Thanks for having me. Appreciate it.
And finally, it's goodbye plastic and hello paper. In the fight for more environmentally friendly production, one packaging giant, Graphic Packaging Holding, is betting big on a future without plastic. It's spending $600 million on the first paperboard production line built in the U.S. in decades. But the devastating effects of plastic on wildlife aren't new. So why are we seeing this shift now? Journal reporter Ryan Dezember explains why.
A lot of companies that are their customers, so think of the big consumer goods companies, Coca-Cola, Pepsi, Kellogg, General Mills, Nestle, those companies are under a lot of pressure from their own investors and from their customers to reduce their carbon footprints and the toll they take on the environment. And one of the easiest things for companies like that to do is to get rid of plastic packaging and replace it with paper.
And that's What's News for Tuesday morning. We'll be back tonight with a new show. I'm Luke Vargas with The Wall Street Journal. Thanks for listening.